There is still no suspect in custody 4 years after someone placed pipe bombs outside the DNC and the RNC in Washington, D.C. the night before January 6th. But in the CBS News exclusive, we have details about a federal security officer whose name was linked to the thwarted attack. CBS News senior White House reporter Jennifer Jacobs joins us now live. Jennifer, first, let's remind our viewers what happened the night before January 6th, before the riots and before the January 6th riots at the DNC and RNC headquarters.
Right. This is a mystery that has been unsolved for nearly 5 years. The FBI released some video that showed this person late on the night of January 5th planting some bombs outside the Democratic and Republican Party headquarters. January 5th, 2021, they offered a $500,000 reward, but the bombs were viable, but they never exploded. They never detonated. And there's never been an arrest in all these years.
Yep. Well, of course, that's an older report because there's been an arrest now. His name is Brian Cole. But you know what? That's not the end of the story. You may recall that Joseph Hanneman has been on our show many, many times. He was with Epoch Times and then The Blaze. And he's written extensively on January the 6th, as has Stephen Baker. If you're following any of this, if you guys follow these writers, which I have, you've heard them on my show. But they identified a different suspect and wrote a lengthy report on this suspect, and then kind of all hell broke loose. They were threatened, and they weren't able to publish that. And a few days later, Brian Cole was arrested. So I am really not weighing in on, I don't know who was the pipe bomber. I don't know, but I'm telling you, I'm not sure it's Brian Cole. And you'll understand why I have doubts about that after you hear our discussion with Joseph Hanneman. But first, right now, the voices in our culture are loud, but truth is often silent. And today, Preborn needs you to help speak that truth. Women facing unplanned pregnancies are often pressured to act quickly before they have time to pause, breathe, or hear the truth about life, dignity, and hope. But I refuse to be silent, and I'm asking you to join me. At Preborn Network Clinics, a woman is welcomed with compassion and given a free ultrasound. She sees the life growing inside her, often for the very first time. And in that sacred moment, fear gives way to clarity. And she's offered something the abortion industry will never provide, and that's the hope of Jesus Christ, the hope of forgiveness, the hope for her baby, just hope, living hope. This April, our goal, meaning Preborn's goal, is to have 11,000 gospel conversations, that's conversations about Jesus, in Preborn Network clinics, trusting God to bring the increase as we remain faithful to speak. You can help make that possible by sponsoring ultrasounds, and you know that because if you listen to the show, you know that, and you probably remember, it's only $28 for one ultrasound, just $28, and of course, any multiple of that, $140 sponsors five ultrasounds. That's so that a mom can see her baby in utero. And, you know, I think something like, well, it's over half. It may be 60%. I wish I had the exact percentage of the women who see their baby in that 40 ultrasound just can't bring themselves to terminate the life. It's pretty amazing. It's just, it's God's magic, really, to see that baby. And so, if you would like to provide an ultrasound for these moms and also make it possible for that conversation to take place about forgiveness and living hope, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. All right, well, this is going to be very interesting. Kind of disturbing, really, but I think it's important because I do believe in truth. And because I believe in truth, we're going to hear some strong doses of it today that might not be convenient. And so Joseph Hanneman is joining me. He's with a brand new outlet called Veritas Regnat. And that means truth reigns in Latin. Veritas Regnat, R-E-G-N-E-T. And he's going to tell you all about that. He and his buddy Steve Baker, both great writers for The Blaze, have left The Blaze to start this media outlet. And man, they're truth tellers in every way. So I think this is going to be a powerful outlet, and we'll talk about that, plus this controversy over the pipe bomber on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
On January 5th, 2021, between 7:30 and 8:30 p.m., an unidentified individual placed pipe bombs near the offices of the Democratic National Committee and the Republican National Committee in Washington, D.C. The FBI and our partners are renewing our call for tips from the public to help us identify the suspect. A reward of up to $500,000 is available for information that leads to the arrest and conviction of the individual responsible for this attempted attack. If you have any information, please call the FBI at 1-800-CALL-FBI.
All right, that is obviously a genuine FBI announcement. And just to remind you, we talked about January the 6th, the riot that ensued. We've talked about it so much, I don't think I have to do too much explaining. Except I need to remind you, this is a story that was just strange. These pipe bombs were a set, as I recall, and we'll sort this out with our guest. He can correct me on this, but they were set to go off, I believe, at 1 o'clock on January the 6th. And many of us thought they were planted at the DNC and the RNC to make it, I think, look like the January 6th so-called, well, the rioters, not insurrectionists, we're really wanting to do an insurrection, a legitimate insurrection with weapons and bombs. That's, I think, the impression that some of us had. But it's a mystery. And, of course, it went for, 4 years without any kind of a solution. And yet there were videos of the pipe bomber. And it's just a strange story. And, of course, we know now that there has been a suspect named. We're going to talk about that today, but it's not nearly as neat as I just described it. And so this next guest has been with us many times, and you know him because he's become a friend. His name is Joseph Hanneman. Joe has been a reporter for many years. He's from my neck of the woods. He lives in Wisconsin, but actually reported for the Chicago Tribune as their Wisconsin reporter for a while. He wrote for the Wisconsin State Journal, the Racine Journal-Times. And you know what? I have to say, Wisconsin has traditionally and for many, many years had one of the best education systems in the country, at least they used to. And if you write for them, their standards were high. So I want to mention that in regard to Joseph's work. Well, when I actually met Joseph for the first time and we were covering January the 6th, he was producing these incredible video of play-by-play what happened in the Capitol on that day when we were just dying for news because, you could hear all kinds of stories about how J-6ers were attacking police and we got all, and there was supposedly a gallows to hang Mike Pence. I mean, the picture that the media painted was pretty dreadful. And so the videos really revealed quite a different story. And Joseph had a lot to do with that, produced, I think, two or three long form videos. And no one in the country, I think, has done a more devoted job of covering Ashley Babbitt and many, many other of the characters. And so I've asked Joseph Hanneman to join us today and bring us up to date on that very controversial story, which has really kind of changed the course of his life, and we'll tell you about that too. So, Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay, so you were with Epoch Times for a long time. Then you moved to The Blaze, which is Glenn Beck's organization, and you worked for them for a long time, produced some great product. And you have just left The Blaze, we're going to talk about that in a second, with your partner, Steve Baker. Now, Steve Baker is also notable for his work covering January the 6th. In fact, he went to jail for his coverage. But you know what, Joe, tell us a little bit about Steve, your partner now.
Yeah, Steve and I just recently launched our own news platform, and we both left The Blaze. It's called Veritas Regnat, Latin for Truth Reigns. So Steve will be my project partner in that. And he was charged with four misdemeanors for being on the Capitol grounds on January 6th as a reporter. He was there as a reporter, and he got the standard four misdemeanors, as I like to call them. And his case was still pending when President Trump issued his pardon declaration and instructed the Department of Justice to dismiss all open cases. And Steve's was still open. He had not gone to sentencing yet. So he has seen this from both sides, from in terms of a defendant and also in terms of a journalist covering this story. So brings a whole lot of experience, firsthand experience, to our new venture.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to give people an idea of the body of things that you guys have both done, highly respected, quoted by, used by many, many people in the media, including me. And so Blaze actually is still one of my go-to outlets, Joe, because I know that people like you write for them and do tell the truth. And so I want to talk about why you left them, but maybe not yet. Let's talk about this story first, because we have talked about this. This pipe bomber thing was just a mystery forever, and the DOJ under Christopher Wray just did nothing. And so when President Trump was elected and Cash Patel came to the head of the FBI and Dan Bongino became the assistant attorney general, they went after the pipe bomber. And the weekend that you guys were also researching, as you always did, in great detail, searching videos and doing investigations, you guys identified the pipe bomber. That came out in a report, I think, in, was it November of 2020? Okay. So, Joe, I'll just say that that report was blocked, and that was the beginning of a lot of problems. So, what can you tell us about that report? You have not been able to speak about that because you were muted because the blaze was threatened, as I understand it. So,
yeah, that's correct. We received a retraction demand and a threat of a defamation lawsuit from a well-known law firm in the D.C. area. Does a lot of work with the CIA, but they're representing a former Capitol Police officer, Shawnee Kirkhoff, who we identified in November as a forensic match to the hoodie-clad bomb suspect that you can see on all the FBI video. We had a very experienced member of the intelligence community do a gait analysis. It's kind of looking at the manner of walking and the body positioning, and she came up as a 94% match, which was all in the story, but very shortly after being published, the management group at the Blaze got rather nervous about it, and we did not get a retraction demand for probably 2 months, but out of caution, they just pretty much made that subject off limits. Eventually, they took the story down. While they did not repudiate it, they did take it offline, and so we've been under a cloud ever since. And that's been greeted on social media as you guys are liars, and you know they pulled your story and all this. None of that was true. It's just quite frankly a lack of spine, in my opinion, and that continued right up and was actually a part of the reason why both of us departed, because we had gotten to the point where they simply were not going to allow us to write what we were working on. It hits a little too close to the forbidden territory that they were trying to stake out. And so this new venture is allowing us to tell that story again, because we have someone charged with the pipe bomb crimes who he did not do it. We've published quite a few stories over the past 6 months that shows in just in incredible detail how this 30-year-old man from Virginia with autism could not possibly be the man they're claiming he is. The physical evidence just doesn't match. So we've got kind of two parallel stories going at the same time.
Yeah. You know, I know you know this, but you and I talked, I believe, that weekend or shortly thereafter, and you joined us just like the couple of days after that happened and told part of this story. But what I'd like to do is do it in kind of reverse form here. The FBI then, two days, something like that, around the same time that you had this report ready to publish, they claimed they found the person. And this, I just want to give people an idea. This was, this is clip six. This is Attorney General Pam Bondi announcing the arrest of Brian Cole. Clip six.
This morning, Brian Cole Jr. was arrested and charged with placing the pipe bombs at the RNC and the DNC on January 5th, 2021. He has been charged with violating 18 U.S.C. 844, which is use of an explosive device. Let me be clear. There was no new tip. There was no new witness. Just good, diligent police work and prosecutorial work, working as a team along with ATF, Capitol Police, Metropolitan Police Department, and of course, the FBI.
All right, so that was the announcement, Joe. So let's do this. What is the big evidence against Brian Cole? And I want to ask you, of course, why you think it's not possible that it's him. I mean, I think they have like evidence of him buying caps for the pipes, and his car was tracked in certain places. I don't know it by heart, but why? What's the general reason why they think Brian Cole, this 30-year-old kid that lived in Maryland, was guilty of this crime?
Well, what they've written in court documents claiming that he was in the general area on Capitol Hill at the time these devices were placed on January 5th, but it's very misleading when you look at that, because the technology that they use in tracking calls, we call them tower pings, are notoriously imprecise. And, you know, could be within a large swath of physical territory. So he did match that, and, you know, that was a big part of it. And then they served warrants and arrested him. And I believe they surveilled his home in Woodbridge, Virginia, looking for a time when he was home alone, because he was taken out without any family member there. And I'll explain the significance of that in a minute, and taken to FBI headquarters and spent about 4 hours talking to agents. And the first 2 hours, he denied having anything to do with it. And, you know, there are certain things to do with autistic people that should go into play when you question someone in a crime. You have to be very careful not to lead them, because false confessions are much more common with people who have autism spectrum disorder than your average criminal suspect. So they say he confessed, but only after 2 hours of them, you know, laying out the elements of the crime and telling him, oh, by the way, if you tell us anything that isn't true, we're going to charge you with more felonies. And then they left him in the interrogation room by himself for 20 minutes and then came back and started showing him some more videos and said, well, we're going to ask you again. Are you the one who placed these devices? And they described it, the FBI did, is that he put his face on the table, sighed, and said, yeah. Now, I don't know about you, but that doesn't sound like a full-throated confession. But he then repeated back what I suspect they wanted to hear, which is very common with autistic people, being able to quote things back to people. You know, that's certainly our theory, but they claim that he gave a full confession, that he had items in his vehicle, I would call them dual use, you know, plumbing items, that yes, you could use them to make explosive devices, but he was also kind of a home hobbyist and did science experiments. So, you know, those things, and plus if you're a criminal mastermind, you're not going to leave those sitting in the back seat of your car with receipts in your own name, using your own credit card, if you're building bombs to blow up the national headquarters of the two political parties. So they really rested their case on what they call the confession. But there's going to be a lot of problems with that.
They have a lot of receipts, I guess, from him buying things at various Home Depots that matched, allegedly matched parts of this homemade bomb. I don't know. What do you say about that, Joe? I know you know the details much better than I do. I'm sure you've examined every bit of it because I know how you work. But how would you explain that away?
Well, they claim that his motivation, first they claim his motivation had nothing to do with January 6th. But then they also say that his motivation was being upset over potential fraud in the presidential election of 2020. Which, as we all know, was the driving force behind January 6th, behind the Trump rally, the protests, and then the rioting that broke out at the Capitol. It had everything to do with election fraud. So, you know, we've got that kind of cognitive dissonance with exactly why he did this. But some of those purchases were made way before 2020. Some of them back in 2018. So if this was an example of someone planning to plant bombs because they were upset over a stolen election, they wouldn't be buying components 18 months ahead of time.
Joe, weren't his parents, I'm doing this from very poor memory here, but his parents, Democrats, weren't they activists? They were not Republican conservatives, were they?
I don't know if they were activists, but the records that we've seen indicated this was a Democrat family. Now, one of Brian Cole's attorneys came out and said that he voted for Trump. I don't know that that's true. We have been trying to get that directly from Brian Cole through some of his other attorneys to say whether he was a Trump supporter or not. But his family and his upbringing, all that was definitely more in the Democratic tradition. So, you know, that's one of these facts that I'm sure will come out as we move towards a trial.
Because it actually makes no sense. I mean, how could he, if he's worried about some stolen election, then it would make a difference about his motivation. But why in the world would someone wishing to do something about that election try to allegedly plant bombs at the RNC, and the DNC? What's the motivation behind doing something like that?
Well, and he apparently told the FBI that he was relieved when he saw that they didn't go off because he didn't want to kill anyone. Yet we know that the timing of the discovery of them on January 6th was very significant. Both devices were found within about 25 minutes of each other, and right at the time Congress was convening to consider objections to the Electoral College votes, suddenly we have these two bombs discovered, and it drew away a huge chunk of police resources to both of those locations, and they were not available to defend the Capitol. And the Capitol was breached, or the property was breached, at 12:53. Right in between the discovery of those two devices. So, you know, this notion that this was just somebody doing this on his own for no particular political reason doesn't mesh with the things that happened on the 6th and the timing of them, the timing of the discovery, and many other things that we've written about that argue against somebody doing this who wasn't part of it, and wasn't part of a conspiracy, which we absolutely believe was the case.
Right, because it just doesn't make any sense. What would his motive be? I mean, if he's upset about the election, why would he try to bomb both RNC and the DNC? And what was he trying to gain by that? I mean, that's not rational. It really isn't. And so, the other thing I want to ask you, did Brian have any background making bombs? Was he? You said he was handy at home. Did he have any track record doing that?
Well, some of the things that the Department of Justice lists in their charging documents are what the family says were not bomb making experiments, but he was trying to make homemade rocket fuel. You know, this he likes to do homemade science experiments, and so he was doing this and I don't remember what year this was, but part of the process involved bleach and some kind of bleach mixture, and he spilled it on the floor. And his mother said she still remembers that, but it was a science experiment. He was not testing out possible fuel for an explosive device. So they have explanations for many of these things that that the FBI has thrown out there, and saying that these all strung together paint a picture of somebody who is a bomber. But the motive is very fuzzy, and if you read the court documents and the charging documents from the FBI, they have all these little snippets. There's not an ongoing quote. There's these little 3-4 word mini quotes, and they stack them all together. And so without seeing the video of the interview, we can't tell exactly what he was saying or trying to say, or was this a jumble? Was he just trying to give them what they wanted to hear? We won't know that until they did record the interview, which is surprising because the FBI doesn't always do that. Until we see that video, we can't know for sure. So it's cobbled together, and given what's happened with the other suspect in this case, the timing of Brian's arrest, I think, was very suspect.
Yes, and so now let's turn to meanwhile, back at the ranch, you guys are doing your own investigation. I mean, you're doing this independent of any law enforcement, of the FBI, or anyone. You're just, because you had already covered J6 in such detail, both of you, you and Steve Baker, and viewed thousands, or I don't overstate, hundreds of hours of video, I'm guessing. And you knew a lot, and so this was just an obvious next thing for you to investigate. I'm putting words in your mouth, but I'm thinking that's why you were doing this. So did you have any idea that the FBI was getting ready to, name a name?
Well, I guess we weren't shocked, because our report that came out naming a former Capitol Police officer who now works for the CIA as the forensic match, and we just discovered last week through some filings by Brian Cole's defense attorneys that this officer, Shawnee Kirkhoff, was a suspect or person of interest, as they like to say these days, in the pipe bombs case, and they opened a file on her before Blaze ever published the story with her name in it. And so she was given a polygraph test by the FBI on November 6th. She failed, according to what the defense put in their filing. And the examiner said that she showed signs of deception and showed signs of giving rehearsed answers. Now, 6 days later, they opened a file on Brian Cole. Well, still knowing that this other person failed their polygraph. So those two things are in conflict.
Okay, so now, Joe, let's find out what you found out. So you're looking at all this video about the pipe bomber, because there was we didn't get to see much of it, the public, but there was a lot more that the FBI had gathered. So tell us about what led you to Shawnee Kirkhoff.
Well, initially we were doing a story about what they call less than lethal crowd control munitions that were used at the Capitol. And at the very beginning, when we knew that the police from overhead just went on a bombardment of the crowd, and I like to call that the lighting of the fuse, because it was at that point that the unrest started and the fighting started and people started lashing out at police officers after this group of bombardiers from the Capitol Police were one level up in this outcropping where the president takes the oath of office, and they were firing down at the heads of protesters, who at that point were still nothing but protesters. And they were striking them in the head, in the neck, in the back, all in violation of protocols and training. And that was really what we believe, sorry for the beeping there, kind of lit the fuse for the day. So we had identified her as being one of those officers in the crow's nest who was firing down at people. And, that we had learned as we investigated the background of the officers who were doing that, that she had left Capitol Police shortly after January 6th, and her coworker said that she just disappeared. All of her social media, her phones, everything were turned off, wiped clean. Nobody knew where to get a hold of her, but they had heard that she went to work for a three-letter agency. And so that came back through one of Steve's confidential sources who worked with her. And we both looked at each other and just honestly said, wouldn't it be something if this was the Hoodie pipe bomber? And that's really how it started. And we started looking into that just to see if, you know, if there was anything there. And one thing led to another, and eventually looking at her athletic career and other things, that she started to fit the profile of the person that the FBI has shown. But we also gathered hours of video that we found on security cameras of the hoodied suspect that the FBI hadn't released. And those things can be used to compare how somebody looks, how they walk, the slope of their shoulders, whether their feet face out or in when they walk. And those are all points of comparison. And we have done that with Brian Cole, and he's not a match on any of it. He walks what they call a duck walk with his feet out. He has very large feet, size 12, where there's the hoodie suspect, their feet were nowhere near that large. So really everything about the way he walks, his posture, his lean forward, all of these things indicated that this is not the same person as the hoodie-clad bomb suspect. So I think that is a very powerful argument that they really ought to take a look at what they're doing. But, you know, they're going after the prosecutor in his case. It's kind of amazing she's still there. She was one of the most active in the Biden DOJ in going after January 6ers, and she's leading the prosecution. And they're really doubling down. They just issued a new indictment this morning with two more charges on it. So I don't think they're looking at the things we've raised. And so it's a mystery to me, other than the suggestion that they don't want us to look at anybody else and would like to close this chapter. But there's a lot more to it.
Well, it's interesting that you should say what you just said, because I've been hearing from people that know that inside the Justice Department, I know this is not a news flash, but there are so many bad people still in the ranks, and they have not been removed. And many of them were the worst on the J6ers. And so that just verifies what you said. I'm not surprised, and I'm not going to say any more about that for right now. I just say that I know that that's happening, and that a lot of people are still being prosecuted, that the prosecutions began under the Biden administration and are still continuing under this administration, because nobody's bothered to take away those attorneys, make them leave, or check what cases they're prosecuting. So that's a conversation for a different day, but this just does add up. Okay, so that's a good reason why it might not be Brian Cole, but I guess the question would be, Joseph, if you are convinced, it sounds like Shani Kirkhoff certainly, but you should probably give us more information as to why you think she was might have been the pipe bomber. Besides her, I think you're hinting, you didn't say this, but we've talked before, her gait, her walk, the way she walked matched what, you didn't you bring an expert in on gaits, on walking?
We did have a forensic analysis done using a computer algorithm that takes a look at how the body moves and makes models out of it and analyzes it and then assigns a percentage. Now, this was done for us by someone deep in the intelligence community who is very expert at this kind of work. You know, we were accused of throwing out junk science and that people think that we just did this ourselves. No, and this is somebody who is a confidential source for very good reasons, that if this person's name were revealed, not only would they likely lose their employment, but their life might be in danger. So we have protected that, and people have tried to use that as, you know, as a point of saying, hey, how do we know? So, well, you don't. But a 94% match is pretty astounding with this kind of computer algorithm. So that was strong enough, and based on this in this person's opinion, and we also showed our video and the conclusions to probably four or five other intelligence community officials who looked at it and said, yeah, that's. They believed that was the same person. So based on all of those things that went into our story, you know, describing Shawnee Kirkoff as a forensic match, this was not, we didn't draw out charges and say, you know, this is the person. No other thing could possibly be considered. But the timing of us discussing that to Brian Cole suddenly being under investigation, 6 days, that to me, that's astounding, and it's not a coincidence.
You know, I read that the FBI had interviewed her or polygraphed her, but I thought it was after the accusation that it was her. I had no idea it happened before you made your report public. So that changes the perspective on this as well. And as I recall, you said to me, you know, right after you wrote this report, that she had had some sort of injury, a sports injury, that caused her to have a certain gait. Is that correct? And that's just to be more specific about what you identified.
That's true. In 2015, she was playing for Temple University. She's a very talented athlete. She was playing soccer, and she had a collision with another player. I mean, it was a brutal collision, and her leg was broken. I believe it was a tibia, very badly, and she ended up having to have 6 hours of surgery. And I'm sure, at least during the healing process, there were implants put in to help the bone regrow. Now, her law firm has chastised us and claimed that to say she has a limp is ridiculous. She's totally healed, but just within the past 2 weeks, put out new side-by-side showing her limping on January 6th at the end of a very long day. So it's, and when you have a repaired injury, that can make it even more unique for a computer to evaluate versus just, you know, your average person walking down the street. But so they clearly wanted people to think that this never did not affect her, but you can see it in, she played professional soccer after that, but it does affect the way she walks. And so that, those are all factors that go into it, but, this is obviously a very complicated story.
Yes. All right. So we kind of tossed around what might be the motivation for a young man like Brian Cole. And it was a little confusing motivation, but I mean, maybe there's some other explanation I'm missing. But if you were to speculate, because that's what police do, they speculate on motive, and that's sometimes how they find criminals. What would you speculate would be the motive here? And what would be the motive you think? I kind of hinted at it earlier, but what do you guys think?
Well, we've considered the possibility that there were people involved in the placing of these devices who thought they were engaging in a training exercise. And that may be, we don't know, but that may be the case with the hooded suspect or Shawnee Kirkoff, if it's determined that, you know, that she fits that or matches that. But we know that there were other elements in the Capitol Police that we believe were aware of this and had a hand in a conspiracy to place them. And this goes, the food chain for this one is going to go really high, and this is going to be the subject of our future reporting. But we have evidence that what happened on January 6th was anticipated by people in the Capitol Police, certain people who knew it was going to be a, well, I won't use the term, but a certain type of show and there was going to be violence. And this was hours before people even started lining up to see President Trump. So, you know, the Capitol Police are neck deep in this stuff. And we will eventually find out who all the players are. But we think it's certainly possible that Johnny Kirkhoff thought she was participating in a training exercise. And that might also explain why when the second bomb was discovered, the Secret Service, which was in the vicinity, just acted like there was no risk at all, and they sat eating their sandwiches while there was a bomb sitting 15 feet away from them. You know, you don't do that if you think there's any chance that thing is real.
Right. Well, were those bombs real? That's the thing that's confusing to me, too. I heard yes and no, and then yes and no. So were they real bombs, and could they have gone off?
They were not. Now, the DOJ continues to insist in Brian Cole's prosecution that they were, quote-unquote, viable devices. But they use a lot of weasel words and try to, the chemical components were there, that if in the right proportion, yada, yada, yada. Well, that doesn't mean that it's a bomb. And Kyle Serafin, a former FBI special agent who did surveillance on this case back in January of 2021, said he was briefed, he and his team were briefed by the FBI, who said these things were not live bombs. They were inert, and they could not have exploded. So, the DOJ continues to try to push that, and this will be a big issue at trial. The defense has their own expert who examined these and said they were missing components that you would need to make a live bomb. So, no, I don't believe they were. I think that the Department of Justice is going to have a hard time proving that these things actually could have gone off. And if they indeed were inert training devices, well, your underpinning for the charges just disappears, because they're not bombs. You placed a prop. They look very suspiciously similar to training props that are used by the federal government when they do training with bomb crews.
So very interesting. And I guess the thing of it is, Joe, there's a lot at stake. I don't need to tell you. There are obvious reasons why the government wouldn't want your story, if it's, or to even threaten the fact that they have arrested Brian, because Dan Bongino, set his hat on this, and he is, I think, the lead in this investigation, and that would be very embarrassing, and it would be embarrassing for the FBI if you're right about this being Shawnee Kirkhoff. So they have a vested interest in making sure that it is Brian. It's upsetting to think about that. And I let me just say again that Joe Hanneman and his partner Steve Baker, who have been previously with The Blaze writing these great articles, always highly respected, both of them. And now they left The Blaze because The Blaze was threatened with a lawsuit, and The Blaze got nervous about that. And so Joe and Steve have left The Blaze, and they've started their own media. This has just happened, what, 4 days ago, 5 days ago, Joe? A week, maybe?
Within the last week.
Yeah, and so this is brand new. They're calling it Veritas Regnat, and of course that's Latin for those of you who didn't take Latin. I took Latin, Joe. It's Truth Reigns, and so they are trying to raise money for their effort. Can you imagine? These guys are journalists. Can you imagine the expense of traveling around the country, of just their time, of trying to feed their families, doing what they're trying to do by gathering this information and writing? And so they could use some help to get this started. I think it's going to take off like a wildfire when it does get started, but they need some help right now. And they've got a GiveSendGo platform set up. It's GiveSendGo.com/VeritasRegnat. And that's R-E-G, like King, N-A-T, Regnat, VeritasRegnat. Joe, is there anything else you'd like to add to what you're writing, what people could look forward to if they come join you and look at your outlet for the latest news? What can they look forward to learning?
We've got four or five stories coming on the pipe bombs case, which we spent most of our time on for the past, say, 8 months. So there's a lot going on there. Now, we had a big story break yesterday with the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, who were really the kind of the centerpiece, the prosecution centerpiece convictions for January 6th. And these things had risen up to the Court of Appeals, and all of a sudden the Department of Justice comes along and tells the court that they want the court to vacate the convictions of Stuart Rhodes and three other Oath Keepers of, you know, a number of Proud Boys and a second group of Oath Keepers that were tried separately. This is a dozen people in total, to vacate their convictions and remand them back to the district court so the indictments can be dismissed with prejudice, which would be like this never happened.
Wow.
So all of that prosecution and these huge trials, these multi-million dollar trials that were run, that would just wipe that clean. So it's awaiting court approval, but the Department of Justice, the same Department of Justice that wants to just wipe away the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers cases is also prosecuting the wrong man, Ryan Cole, for the pipe bombs.
Well, you live in a twisted world, and you know that, Joe. We've talked about it before. But look, you believe in truth, and so do I. And that's why you've named your new organization or your new media outlet, Truth Reigns. Truth Reigns. And we both believe that. So as long as we can say the truth, I believe, I always have hope. And so it's Truth Reigns. That's Veritas Regnat. Go to giftsandgo.com/Veritas Regnat. Joe Hanneman, thank you so much. I wish you and Steve Baker all the best on this. And I'll be one of your biggest fans. So, okay.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Okay, talk to you soon. Thank you. All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Reborn makes it possible for us to have these conversations. And you all, so many of you have been faithful donors. Just amazing. You are amazing to me. I would say that, you know, Preborn advertises on almost all the major talk shows and podcasts. And our show performs as well as, from my understanding, most of those major podcasts. And you know why? It's because of you. It's because of you. There are fewer of you, but you give generously and you really believe in saving babies. And so thank you for that. I'm deeply grateful. I'm deeply grateful. And so for just $28, which is the cost of a dinner right now, in most places where most normal people eat, you can sponsor an ultrasound or introduce a mom to her baby for the very first time. And 100% of your donation will go towards saving those babies. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
How do you explain that the Patel FBI was able to identify a pipe bomb suspect once they put their attention to it within about 6 weeks, but the Ray FBI failed to identify a single suspect or make one arrest in 4 years? And what does that tell you about the way the investigation was handled? And why did it take so long for the Ray folks to even look at doing a pipe bomb investigation? Can you give me some insight on that?
Okay, that's the question, not the answer. That was Congressman Morgan Griffith. He's a congressman from Virginia, a Republican. He's actually in the Freedom Caucus. And he's asking someone involved in the investigation, trying to get to the bottom of this, but he's asking a good question. And I've asked Bruce to join me. Bruce is, of course, a former prosecutor in Cook County, and that's Chicago. He's also a retired Federal Bureau of Investigation special agent. And so, honey, thank you for joining me.
Glad to be here.
All right, honey, he asked that question. Patel did this, FBI Director Patel did it so quickly. Christopher Wray did nothing for 4 years. Why would that be?
Well, I don't think anyone's ever going to know the answer to that question, Sandy. This whole investigation, or lack thereof, of this pipe bombing investigation starting on January 5th of 2021 has been a mystery to people. You have potentially a bomb being within feet of a prospective presidential candidate and was the nominee for vice president on the Democratic ticket, being within reach of this bomb.
Kamala Harris.
Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
And the Secret Service in the vicinity, and seemingly even after they were alerted, the Secret Service really didn't respond to anything. I mean, there are so many loose ends as to what really happened that day, and was there collusion among... I mean, I think the overall January 6th experience now shows us that there was collusion going on, starting with Nancy Pelosi refusing to bring the National Guard to guard the Capitol building on the day that the votes were going to be counted, the electoral votes. Muriel Bowser, the mayor of Washington, D.C., failing to provide adequate protection for the Capitol, with a lot of forewarning that there could be a lot of trouble that day. So, you know, you start right there, and we still haven't figured out that part of it, and you keep pulling back the, you know, the layers of the onion, and now you get down to this pipe bomb. And I'm with you. I don't know who did this. I don't know that the person arrested was the correct person. I will say that I think if we want to just focus on who did the bombing here or potential bombing, I think it's going to boil down to being a forensic evidence case. You just heard Joe talk about the confession or lack thereof by Cole. You've seen some of the evidence that the I read the affidavit that the FBI presented to the district court to justify arresting Brian Cole. And if you read it on its face, it gives a lot of evidence. And the problem with an affidavit, though, is it does not go into specifics. So you can make you know, an allegation against somebody that they had bomb-making materials. And supposedly when Brian Cole was arrested in his car and in his home were things that were consistent with bomb-making materials, pieces of pipe, end caps, wire caps. You know, these are the kind of things that often go timers. They're consistent. Steel wool, which is heated during the bombing process to make the explosive go off, that was present. Now, does that in and of itself make him guilty? I don't know. You have to put that together as to did that match what was in the actual devices that were found? And this is why I think this is going to be a forensic case, is we don't have anything listed in the affidavit as to whether was there any DNA found on any of these devices, and was that DNA able to be used to process to look if it was a match for somebody? We have a failed polygraph exam, supposedly for this Shawnee Kirkhoff, who was the Capitol Police officer that Joe says he thinks is the person that set these devices both at the RNC and the DNC. We don't have the actual results of that polygraph. We don't know what was asked of her in regard. I'm assuming they asked her if she placed those bombs, and that's what she failed on.
Could I interject that you were a polygrapher in the FBI, highly trained, you did, this is what you did, and I think you would say that that's not exactly conclusive. It kind of can help you as a piece of the evidence?
Well, there's a reason that polygraph examination results are not admissible in court as definitive truth, and that's because there are a lot of variables that can go right or wrong during a polygraph exam, and, you know, just as in anything human, whether it be a medical research or a polygraph, sometimes there are agendas by the particular agency that's using them. And I'm not saying that that's what happened here, but you have to be very careful. Really, a polygraph is not in and of itself dispositive of whether or not somebody committed a crime. What it's used for is once the results are obtained from the exam, then you focus your investigation in whichever way it's leading you. If the person fails the exam, then you really start looking at them. If they pass the exam and you have another suspect, you probably focus your attention on the other suspect.
So it's an indicator, but it's not the final answer.
Right.
Yeah, just to be clear, it does mean something, but it doesn't mean, yes, she's guilty.
Yeah, and I am not dismissing this polygraph failure as a non-entity. I'm just saying that you don't make or break your case strictly on a polygraph exam. Mm. It's very dangerous to do that. You know, again, there is so much that points different directions. If you listen to Joe's findings, you have a lot of problem believing that Brian Cole was the person who did this. Obviously, if you listen to the FBI's version of what happened or what they say happened, you think, well, Brian Cole obviously did this. We have a lot of things that are going to go into the trial here. If Brian Cole ever does end up on trial, supposedly he is autistic. I can tell you as a former prosecutor, anytime you prosecute someone that has some kind of disability or that wants to represent themselves or is just a sympathetic character, juries find it very difficult to convict people that have, say, special needs or they think maybe wasn't treated right given their condition. And as you heard Joe say, he finds the FBI's interrogation of Cole to be suspect. Did they coerce him? Now I have to tell you, I don't, based on what he said, I do not leap to that same conclusion. I've often talked to people for 3-4 hours about something, and oftentimes it does take a long time before someone gives you a statement. Normally when they come in, they're scared, and, you know, it's just like any person. When you're scared, you usually deny you did something. No, I didn't do it. But then what I would do is I would lay out the evidence that we had against a person and say, now, this is what we have, this is what we have, and ask them to try to explain it. And oftentimes they could not explain the evidence other than that it pointed to them. And then finally the realization comes, you know what, they've got me, I might as well tell them I did this. I don't know if that's what happened in this case, but I can tell you that a 4-hour interrogation is not unusual, especially given the gravity of this crime.
But if they don't have, you said, like forensic evidence, going to be hard.
Yeah,
it's going to be hard.
I think what's going to happen is, I worked a bombing case like this on a judge who was killed in Birmingham, Alabama, back when I was very first started with the FBI. He received a box in the mail, and it blew up when he opened it, and it killed him. And it was a pipe bomb, and it had nails and things in it that shredded him. And I can tell you that a bombing case is all about forensics. When you watch, like, CSI on TV and you see a bombing, usually someone will walk in and go, oh, it was C4, it was set over here, there were 2 pounds of it, and that's what happened. That could not be further from the truth. A bombing case is solved by getting down on your hands and knees and collecting all of the little bits of evidence, whether it be nails, pieces of pipe, pieces of fuse, pieces of a timer, and almost reassembling it as best you can to determine the makeup of the bomb. And in this case, you know, when you're working with things like that, if you're assembling a bomb, you're going to leave DNA on certain pieces unless you're wearing gloves. And we don't know whether the person who collected or, you know, constructed these bombs was wearing gloves. So we'll have to see what that does. But also there's tests that we can run on the metallurgy of the pipe bomb. Because when a pipe is made, even though it's made by the same manufacturer and it might be made, you know, within days of each other, it's going to have a different metallurgy. Metallurgy is nothing more than the chemical composition of the pipe. And in any manufacturing process, steel, whatever it is, I used to work in a steel mill, and so I knew about this, different batches of steel will have different metallurgy. When you deliver steel to someone as a customer, the first thing that you normally do is have their metallurgist check that steel to see if it meets specs. So the reason I say this is if the FBI has recovered additional pipes in the car or in the home of Brian Cole, my first instinct would be we have to test the metallurgy of these pipes and see if it matches the metallurgy of the pipe bombs. Same thing with some of the materials, and I don't profess to be an expert on this, but, you know, the steel wool. When was that bought? Where was it? You'd be surprised how much you can trace things because boxes often have tracking numbers. So you go back to the manufacturer and you say, when was this manufactured? Where was it shipped to? And who was it what store was it ultimately sent to be sold? When we had this pipe bomb back in Birmingham, it came in a cardboard box. We went all the way to China. We sent two agents all the way to China to go through box factories there to determine where that box came from. And they found it. They found the correct factory. So, I mean, that's the extent to which normally these investigations go.
Well, I think that's what they describe. You know, they in fact, let me just play. This is Kash Patel, clip 8. And he kind of describes a short clip, but he describes, I think, the work that they did. This is clip 8.
As the Attorney General said, we did not discover any new information. What we did, an investigation spearheaded by the deputy director and the ADIC of our Washington field office, brought in a new team of investigators and experts, re-examined every piece of evidence, sifted through all the data, something that the prior administration refused and failed to do. As a result of that, we generated numerous investigative leads, executed multiple legal process with our U.S. attorney partners, and came to this conclusion today. And that is why we were able to safely secure this individual into custody.
Okay, so they're very proud of this, and so was Dan. That's the problem, Bruce. Anybody that has a different thought about it, just on a practical level, this is not a popular viewpoint. The viewpoint that Joe and and his partner have, this is a very controversial viewpoint because it's going to be really hard for this new FBI to be discovered to be wrong on this.
Well, and I agree with you. Having been a listener to Dan Bongino's show before he left to take over his spot at the FBI, he was very irritated that this case had not been solved. And having been a former Secret Service agent, I think it really bothered him because the Secret Service was getting a lot of heat as to their actions or lack of action when these bombs were found. And he basically made a pledge when he became the assistant director of the FBI that they would solve this case no matter what. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It can be either. It can be a good thing if it gives you motivation and perseverance. It can be a bad thing if you get desperate, like, we have to find somebody to pin this on. And I can't tell you which way this went. I only have as much information as you guys do. But I will say this, I think we have to wait and see how detailed these things that were listed in the affidavit as evidence are. Because if we're going to have a righteous investigation, I think that there has to be a real deep dive on the components of the bomb, the tracking of Cole, the tracking of this Shawnee Kirkhoff. I mean, that throws Shawnee Kirkhoff throws a whole new dimension into this thing that she left supposedly under suspicious circumstances, the Capitol Police.
Scrubbed everything, scrubbed her social media.
And
ends up at CIA.
This information about how she walks or doesn't walk, I don't know how to take that. I mean, to rely strictly on that, it would have to be an awfully unique gait, as they said, or walk. I mean, it's part of the puzzle. I haven't seen, when I watch the video, I don't necessarily see an unusual gait on this person. So, you know, again, that's things that now that we have named and we have real people, we can look at how does Brian Cole walk? Does he walk similar or exactly like the person?
If he walks like duck walk, that would be a big thing that you'd say for sure.
And so that could be dispositive of this case. Yeah. Again, it's going to be a forensic case. In other words, it's going to come down to look, here's what we recovered, and who links to that? How do we link them? Is it DNA? Is it a photograph? Whatever evidence they're going to use. I will say this, though. I don't know the degree to which Brian Cole supposedly has autism. I think that might come into play. Again, people have to voluntarily consent if they're going to give us a confession. It has to be knowing and voluntary. And even if it was voluntary, will it be assumed that it was knowing given his condition or lack thereof? We'll see. That'll be a motion that the defense will make. They'll say we want to suppress or get rid of the confession because Mr. Cole is unable to understand what he was doing when he gave that confession. We'll see.
Yeah.
It's a long way to go yet.
Well, the thing of it is, too, you might say to yourself, well, at this point, what does it matter? Well, the reason it matters, among the fact that we all need truth, truth is important and justice is really important. We might see a person that's innocent be charged with this crime or go to jail for this crime, and we might find someone that's guilty who's gotten away with it. And that's not right. We don't want a system like that. And so that's why we have to listen, I think, to Joseph and Stephen as they write about this. I think we have to give a hearing to what they have to say. All right, well, we'll be hearing more about it because I'll have Joe back. But meanwhile, if you guys would like to help Joe and Steve Baker get this Veritas Regnat off the ground, I would really encourage you to do that, even if you just send $10. I think that would be a big encouragement to them, $25, $100, whatever you can afford. Go to Veritas Regnat, V-E-R-I-T-A-S, that's truth in Latin, and verify is one of our words we get from that, the root of that, Veritas. Regnant means that's the king. You know, reg is the Latin word for king, and we get reign from that. So truth reigns. Truth reigns. Veritas Regnat. Go to giftsandgo.com/Veritas Regnat and see if you can help Joe and Stephen. We'll do follow-up with them. Their information is just priceless, so I highly recommend it. Honey, thank you for joining me. I don't know if we solved anything, but that was really interesting what you just told us. So,
well, it's not going to be solved in the next 5 minutes, I can tell you. It's going to be a long process, I think.
Yeah. All right. Well, honey, thank you. And thank you all for listening. And I want to thank you. Of course, you know that we could not do this without the support of Preborn. Just go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation. And thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.